And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. So, of course, as climate hawks, we're well aware that we need a great deal of clean energy over the coming decades in order to transition the society away from fossil fuel and over to sustainable energy sources, right? To find a way to live on the planet that's not destroying the planet. And because that is such an enormous challenge, we ought to be open to new technologies, new ideas, new ways of creating energy, as long as they satisfy the clean requirements that we have, right? If, however you want to make electricity, if it's clean and green, it's viable. Well, that proposition has come up to be tested in a sense recently, because there's been a lot of talk about a technology. I dare not say it's a new technology, but it has returned to conversation in climate circles. About discussion of a way of generating energy that's called fusion, nuclear fusion, right? That's distinct from nuclear fission, which we use in most of our nuclear power plants. Anyway, nuclear fusion has popped up because there's a company spinning out of MIT based here in Massachusetts that got a whole lot of money. $1.8 billion of private equity funding to go out and build a fusion reactor with a prototype producing power through the fusion reaction in the year 2025. And the first practical prototypes, the first practical production versions being released in the early 2030s. Very tempting, isn't it, right? Fusion power. I'm sure that if you've not, even if you haven't studied the topic, you've heard of fusion power as being some sort of limitless, clean way of making electricity. Wouldn't it be wonderful? Wouldn't it be wonderful? Well, it seems like fusion power, as I said, has been around for many decades now. When I was a younger man, it was a hot topic of plasma fusion. A lot of graduate students went into it, dedicated their lives to it. Noble work. But we still don't have a practical fusion reactor. So let me just take a minute and talk about some of the vocabulary so we don't get too lost. There are two major words when you're talking about nuclear power that you have to understand. One is nuclear fission, with F-I-S-S-I-O-N, where the heavy nuclei like uranium are split. And by splitting that uranium atom in two, you release some energy. And of course, you also end up with radioactive waste. I mean, the two halves of the uranium are still pretty much hanging around, and that's not good stuff. Anyway, that's nuclear fusion. That's what your Hiroshima bomb was made out of, right? Splitting up uranium. The other important word is nuclear fusion. F-U-S-I-O-N. And the idea of nuclear fusion is that you take two extremely light atoms, essentially two hydrogen, and you press them together with so much force that they, as I say, you have to really jam them together. Suddenly they realize they prefer to be, the two atoms would prefer to be close together, and they give off some energy and fuse into one thing, right? That process of fusing light atoms into larger atoms with the release of energy, that's fusion. Of course, fusion is hard to do because you have to put it, you have to take an awful lot of energy, wherever you get that energy, it'll take a lot of energy to push those two hydrogen atoms very, very close to each other before you get to gain any energy. And that's the problem, right? It takes so much energy to create these reactions that you're never able to reach what's called a break-even point, where you're getting more energy out of the reaction than you're putting into it. Well, if these guys from Commonwealth Scientific have something called a high temperature superconducting magnet, which again is another fancy term for essentially a big room sized magnet, makes a magnetic field, but it can generate that magnetic field with much lower costs in terms of the amount of energy and the sophistication of the equipment and yada, 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 which makes them think, these Commonwealth Scientific folks, that they can make a practical fusion reactor in the near term. Even the first units rolling out in the early 2030s, that is to say, if everything goes swimmingly well and we're able to produce production fusion reactors by the year 2033, let's say, that's still a little bit late to the climate party, because we have a deadline imposed by nature coming up in 2030. Right, we'll either have blown by that, or we, in which case it's going to be, well, anyway, we'd like to have these fusion reactors before 2030, well distributed. Doesn't look like that's going to happen, but the question comes, what value would a fusion reactor have, say, in the year 2060, right? Essentially, the nuclear fusion industry, such as it is trying to make the case that they should receive a lot of funding to create these fusion power plants, which will help us at some point in the future to generate lots and lots of clean energy cheaply. Right? Of course, those words echo what we heard in the 1950s when nuclear fission power, right, your standard reactor, was going to be too cheap to meter. But again, put that aside. So fusion power is out there. There are advocates calling for it. In many ways, it's very attractive, because fusion power, right? Again, this is electricity generated through the fusion process, which is purported to generate much less radioactive waste, and to be essentially immune from the great Three Mile Island kind of meltdown problem. Just doesn't work that way. That stuff doesn't happen. It's not relevant. And I believe that. These fusion systems, even as they scale up, are not going to cause something like a Three Mile Island. Right. So that's a good thing. So where do these things fit into the climate picture? Well, I guess I would suggest that if you had practical fusion power, that would be a great way to provide what's called firm power. That is to say, we all know wind and solar are subject to intermittency, right? Sun doesn't shine, the wind doesn't blow. We're all scrambling like crazy to get battery powered systems, which exist now, right? So it's not as if we're missing the technology. But in the presence of lots and lots of fusion reactors, you wouldn't have so much need for this kind of battery backup power, and the intermittency of the solar power would be less important, because your base load would all be carried by the fusion plants. And of course, keep in mind, these fusion plants, flip side, the fusion plants are going to look an awful lot like the nuclear plants, right? They're going to be very expensive, very centralized. They're going to be source of objections from all the communities around them, because people just don't want them, probably, in all likelihood. And so there's ups and downs. But anyway, the good side is that fusion plants would provide firm base power that would run forever, unless the nuclear power plant went down. I mean, unless the fusion power plant stopped for some reason. Sort of the disadvantage of these plants is perhaps more useful for us to think about. As I said, they're going to be costly, probably. These things always are. They're going to be difficult to site. They're going to take a long time to build, right? But those things can be overcome. These power plants would come fairly late to the solution of climate change, but they are kind of a mid-century solution to things. It's one of the important things that I worry about in building an industry around fusion power is that it's very centralized and very political, right? In other words, somebody's going to own that fusion power plant. It's not going to be owned by the neighborhood in the way the neighborhood can own a bunch of solar panels in the, you know, on people's roofs, right? This thing is, this sort of centralized power requires enormous political machinations, right? And that, I guess I just don't trust that the people who own that power plant are not going to try to make a financial advantage out of it. And I think that the centralized power distribution is also sort of unreliable in the sense that if that goes out, you have big, big issues compared to heavy, heavy infiltration of solar and wind, which is less likely to take the whole system down because one central point fell out. But I think perhaps the biggest reason that I'm concerned about the idea of huge amounts of cheap, clean energy from a fusion-powered future. The reason I don't like that is because it allows us to persist in a fantasy that somehow we can live just the way we do now, except our electricity is green, right? We can all live in our suburbs, make plastic, drive in and out of the cities in rush hour hell. We all have an EV. The electricity is cheap. Nothing really changes. I would suggest that that's not the future that we're headed towards. Nobody knows what the future is, but we can almost guarantee that nobody's going to get it right. And the idea that we have lots and lots of clean energy and can live our lives as we would have dreamed if climate change didn't exist, I think that's a bad way to think about it. So the punchline of this whole thing, fusion power, we'll put up links to the various articles about it, but fusion power is a good option. It's something that ought to be researched. We ought to be trying to make a fusion power system work, as long as that work does not become so costly that it drains financial resources from other renewable energy studies. And in my experience, there's all too realistic a possibility of that. But anyway, fusion power, if we had it today, we'd certainly be using it, right? So it's good. It has a role, but it's not a magic bullet. And the potential marketing of fusion power as a limitless source of energy that resolves us of all our other anxieties, that we don't have to worry anymore because we're going to have fusion power to take care of everything, I think that is a false and dangerous idea that we ought to stay away from. Anyway, we'll put up links to some of this stuff at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a question about this or any other show, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to us on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to find us on their modern podcast distribution app. Search for The Climate Minute associated with Massachusetts Climate Action. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. I want to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investments, and a price on carbon that protects environmental justice communities. So thanks everyone for listening. Talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.